Today's episode of Digital Dating features someone I consider a podcast mentor. He is not afraid to stir the dating pot. Today, Paul Bauer from the Come On Man podcast joins me. Paul has bold opinions, a sharp sense of humor, and his own twist on the whole red pill movement. We get into modern dating, masculinity, and a few things that might just make you go, "Wait, did he really just say that?" Trust me, folks, you're going to want to stick around for this one. Welcome back to another episode with Anonymous Andrew, and I have what I would call a mentor, because this gentleman helped me, he didn't know that until I just talked to him, helped me start my podcast and helped me get my life back on track. With me today is Paul Bauer. Hello, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Andrew, thank you so much for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Let me give the audience a little bit of rundown on you if they haven't heard of you, and I don't know how that could be. Paul is a Navy veteran, but importantly, he is the host of the Come On Man podcast, and he's a certified master life coach, and he's an NLP practitioner, and I want to ask you about that a little bit. And he's got three books out, right? Three?
Yep.
Okay, so book one is Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was 18. Book two is The Essential Skills of a Masculine Presence, Psychology Paradigm. That's very interesting. And book three, which I think was released just recently.
In January, yeah.
Get Her to Fuck You Again, a Red Pill Guide to Fixing a Dead Bedroom. And of course, the you in the book is asterisked out, unfortunately, because the society we live in is still back in the 1960s.
People are easily offended, so you can't say adult words now.
Yeah. Oh my God. And we were just talking before, you can't even say sex on YouTube. And because they'll demonetize him. It's just silly, Paul. I don't get it. Anyway, welcome to the show. And I've been seriously listening to you for the past 2 years. His podcast, when I was down in the dumps after a bad relationship, thinking I was fucking up everywhere, I started listening to Paul just by listening to you. And Paul, you have a coaching business, right? Where you help guys.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. And I've been coaching for the last several years now. And it was like last year that I started getting into the helping guys in dead bedroom situations. But before that, I've coached men just on, you know, life skills. I've coached guys on dating, coached guys in their relationships. So just I'm a general certified master life coach, but those are typically the areas I work in.
And what does I looked it up. Is it NLP? Is that the neuro-linguistic practitioner?
Neuro-linguistic programming. Yeah.
Programming. Okay.
Yeah. That's... And it's fascinating. When I first heard of NLP, I don't know if you've ever in your studies read the book, The Game by Neil Strauss.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. You would enjoy that book. It's a book about pickup artists. And
yes. Okay, yeah. I know what book that is.
Yeah, it's a book about pickup artists. But what's fascinating about it is it's not the pickup artistry and the canned routines that these guys would use. What I found fascinating about that book is that all these guys were out there and they're able to get women to sleep with them very quickly, but they were all miserable because they didn't have the skills to keep women around in a long-term relationship. And so they would fall in love with some of these girls, and these girls would give them mixed signals and all the kind of stuff that we deal with in the space. And they would be, you know, depressed and go on these drug benders. And it was fascinating. But one of the guys in the book was a legendary pickup artist named Ross Jeffries. And Ross Jeffries would use neuro-linguistic programming to seduce women. And so what first perked my ears up about it was, oh, you could use this to basically use conversational hypnosis to get women to mesmerize and like get you in bed. So I started studying NLP and I found out that's not what it was designed for. It was designed for reprogramming your paradigms, reprogramming your subconscious mind, fixing traumas and mental health issues. And it was a tool designed for therapy, basically.
Right.
And so the more I started studying it, the more I also realized that all the stuff that I've been learning over the last several, you know, 5-6 years about the law of attraction. I'm a big law of attraction guy. I found that all the techniques that they teach you to manifest your dreams, they're all just NLP techniques to reprogram your paradigm.
Really? You
know? Yeah. And so wow. I was like, oh my God, I've been studying this for 5 years already when I decided to go get my certification. And so I went through a training program through Priory Academy out of England, and they had a full master NLP coaching program. And then on top of that, just self-studying and stuff. And I found that, yeah, everything that I was learning with law of attraction can be used in an NLP practice. So that's how I implement that.
And you use it in helping the guys that come to you?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Very... And my favorite things are, which I talk about them in all three of my books, actually, is my favorite is affirmations, you know, just sentences that you say to yourself. You say it with intention. You say it it's a future goal, but you say it as if it's already happened, and you just repeat that stuff daily. And that it's kind of like when you say a lie to yourself too many times, right?
Right.
You begin to believe this lie.
You begin to believe it. Yeah.
Well, the same thing happens with the truth and what you want your life to be like. You can say it as if you've already achieved it enough times to where your mind believes it. And the thing is, your mind will make it true. It will, you know, give you ideas. Wow. It'll give you epiphanies. It will, you know, you'll start acting in a certain way that you'll start achieving these goals. And it's not magic. It's psychology. But that's the thing is when you get into the law of attraction, it starts getting off in the woo-woo and people start talking about, you know, the mysteries of the universe and crystals and chakras. And it's like, you know, maybe, but if you just really want a simple explanation for it, it's just simple psychology.
You probably can't see it, but I got a chakra thing hanging on my wall. This is the weird thing. The last girlfriend got me in, she was Latina, and she got me into tarot card reading and chakras and stones and the crystals and all that stuff. And I still got it all.
Yeah.
So,
it's funny in this space, people sort of crap on that and they're like, oh, that's chick crack. But you know what? Chick crack is fun for one. And two, women are into it. And so if you can learn a little bit about it, even if you don't believe in it fully, when you're having conversations with women, you can talk about that kind of stuff and be somewhat knowledgeable about it, you know?
Yeah. In a couple of my dating profiles, I wrote, because I do tarot cards. I have 50 of them over there, and I studied it, and I did it for years. The podcasting kind of took over. I don't really have time. But when I had it in my dating profile, I got a lot of hits from women. They were, like, really impressed. They were like, oh, you read tarot cards? And it got me dates. It didn't go anywhere, but, you know, it was a chick magnet, basically. So, yeah, some of this woo-woo stuff, to me, it's not bullshit. I believe in it, but I just don't have time to really indulge in it that much anymore. So, okay, there's so much I want to talk to you about. Let's go with, I guess, the first thing would be, and then I want to talk about your podcast. What the fuck is going on in the dating world? Why is it not, so you're in a relationship right now, and for the folks listening, he designates a name for his girlfriend, Nurse Chick, which I think is cool. How long have you been with her? That I don't know.
We're going into our fifth year.
Fifth year. Okay. Yeah. And you met how?
We met on a dating app, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you know, guys like my age and your age, you know, back in the day, like we didn't have dating apps.
No,
you know, when I used to be married. If we
Me
go
too.
Off on a tangent of my Batman origin story a little bit, I was always pretty good with women when I was, you know, in high school and stuff. I lost my virginity at 16. I went to 4 different proms, but I was always that guy that dated with that sniper mentality where it was one girl at a time, and I'd go all in on the first girl that's nice to me. And and I was always like, I'm going to marry this girl. She's the one. She's my soulmate and whatever. And I ended up joining the Navy when I was 18. And 2 years into that enlistment, I met my now ex-wife. And we met when I came home on leave. We basically spent a week together. And then we had this long-distance relationship for about a year before I convinced her to move out to San Diego with me. And then we were only together in person for about 3 months before we eloped. So I basically knew this girl in person 3 months worth before rushing for that white picket fence. And there's a lot of reasons for that too. It wasn't just, you know, me being a hopeless romantic. It was a lot of that too was I was getting ready to go on deployments for the Navy, and I wanted to make sure she was being taken care of and stuff. She and I ended up, we had a pretty good relationship for the first half of that. We have two wonderful kids out of that marriage, but the last half of my marriage was just absolutely miserable. I gained a lot of weight. She was nagging me all the time, and I would work like 17-hour days just hoping to avoid her and not have to deal with the nonsense. And there was days where I didn't want to sleep in the same room with her. I'd go grab a cot from the garage and go sleep in my office and stuff like that. And luckily, in 2014, she filed for divorce and we ended up separating. And that was my first stint on the dating circuit in like 15 years. You know, I had no practice. I hadn't really talked to, you know, women. I haven't like approached women in public in 15 years, really. Dating apps didn't exist. So now I had to learn dating apps. I was 50 pounds overweight. And I had no game, man. And I floundered around on that dating circuit in 2014 for like 11 months before I met Red Pill Chick. And she was a gal that I sort of lovingly say she was a little bit of a chubby chaser. You know, she was an attractive girl, but she liked bigger guys. And I was a heavier set guy then. And she was all in on me at the beginning. And I was like, oh, this is the first girl that's nice to me in 15 years. You know, I immediately fell in love, ended up in that relationship for 4.5 years. And she had mentally checked out 2 years into it, you know, because I fell back on basically husband mode is what I'd call it, is where I fell back into complacency immediately. I was like, oh, I don't have to try anymore. I already got her. We're basically husband and wife. You know, we're sort of playing house. And I just stopped doing the things that keep that attraction going in the long term. And she mentally checked out 2 years into it. She started lining up her male orbiters. And by the end of that relationship, she was acting so bad that I finally broke up with her. And I found out later that she cheated on me. Right. And that was in 2019. And that's when I really became red pilled, you know, and I started on this journey. I realized I was the common denominator. I took a deep dive in all these books. Some of these books I've read, you know, 24 times and stuff. And that's really, you know, how that started. But yeah, man, the dating circuit, what I found in 2014, when I was floundering, 2019, when I actually started doing better, it was the difference there was largely of my physical appearance. I had lost all the weight when I was with Red Pill Chick. I got in shape. I lost 50 pounds and it was easy to get dates all of a sudden. I was like, what, this is crazy. You know, it's like it was a night and day difference. The problem was I couldn't keep these women around more than two or three dates. And like, I was getting ghosted. I was getting women saying, yeah, I'm just not feeling the connection, like all this kind of stuff. And I was like, what is wrong?
Well, that's my point about what's going on, because that was just 5 years ago you're talking about, right? Maybe six before Nurse Chick. So
it was before Nurse Chick. Yeah. And so, So I was on this deep dive and I ended up in a men's group called the 3% Man Group. And we were studying Corey Wayne's book, How to Be a 3% Man. And it was during that time I was spinning plates. I was dating multiple women. I really realized that the sniper dating was a very inefficient way of dating. It's much better to keep your options open, just facilitate fun and fuck, as I say in my first book. And the cream will rise to the top. And you'll find that when you do that, you're not needy. And that neediness where you're trying to like push for a relationship and you're always trying to occupy a girl's time and all that kind of stuff, women sense that and it pushes them away. Like you'll hear women say, I want a man to pursue me, but she doesn't. Like women need to pursue the man. And so there's almost an art to it, right? Where you pique a girl's interest, you initiate the conversation, you pique the girl's interest, then you get her chasing you. And the way women will chase you is it's very subtle. Women aren't very overt. They're not direct. They speak in subtext. So you'll find that a woman who wants you to ask her out, she'll put herself in your orbit. She'll like reach out to you. Hey, I was just thinking about you, or whatever. And when a woman's reaching out to you, you just need to seize the opportunity and use that as your opportunity to set the next definite date and just keep that ball rolling and stuff like that. But once I learned that, and that there's actually a science to dating, it was easy. It was like shooting fish in a barrel. And then and then I ended up meeting Nurse Chick on Match.com. And so I also have a course on dating. I originally called it No Cold Approach in the Cow Pasture, but the way I laid out the course is, if I can do it out here in the middle of nowhere, where I literally about live in the middle of nowhere. I live in a goddamn cow pasture.
You're in Colorado.
I'm on the western slope of Colorado, so I'm close to Grand Junction, about an hour outside of Grand Junction, but I'm in the country. Like, all the houses are dispersed. It's all ranch and farmland out here. There's no great places to meet women organically. So everything,
go on dates.
Well, you can go on dates, but like the most of the women are in Grand Junction or in Montrose. So both those places are an hour drive for me. And so In order to meet those women, you have to be good at online dating. So you have to get good at dating apps. You have to get good at using social media. Social media is highly underrated. If you guys could use Facebook to meet women, like your Amazon shopping for chicks, right? Because on dating apps, you're sort of served up what's available. But on Facebook, it's almost like cold approach, and you're working with a wider geographical area, and it's more effective. So I talk about that in the course. So that's how I met Nurse Chick. I met her on Match. I normally recommend guys go out for drinks in the evening, because that's more of a romantic setting, right? If you want her to be your lover, you have to do what lovers do. But Nurse Chick worked graveyard shifts, so she couldn't go out for drinks in the evening. I had to do a coffee date, which I don't recommend, but I was like, whatever. I've been dating long enough that, you know, if you have game, game's game, right? So met her up for coffee. She was supposed to work that night, and it would happen to be WrestleMania weekend. And so after the date, I went in for the kiss and said, okay, cool. You know, it was nice meeting you. And I went home to watch WrestleMania. Well, she got low census, which means she didn't have enough patience for the hospital to justify her working that night. So she didn't have to work. So she calls me up and says, hey, I don't have to work tonight. I'm just wondering what you're up to. And
really?
And I said, well, I'm watching WrestleMania. You're welcome to join me. She drove an hour to my house to watch WrestleMania. And I knew at that time, if a woman's reaching out, it's your opportunity to set the next definite date. I also knew that if she's reaching out, she's got high interest. And so I threw out the WrestleMania thing, because I was like, she's either going to show up. And if she shows up, no woman's not driving 2 hours round trip for nothing. So as long as I just, you know, play my cards right, like things are going to happen. Or she's going to say no, and I get to watch WrestleMania, and it's, you know, whatever.
So it was a win-win.
It was a win-win for me. And so anyway, she came, I introduced her to pro wrestling, and the rest is history.
Wow. All right. So for you, the dating app, even though you were a little rusty because I don't know how long you were on Match before you met her, but it worked for you. And it has worked for me. I've had, in the past 20 years, you said dating apps didn't exist around 2015. They didn't exist the way they do on now with the cell phone. But back in like 2008, eHarmony and Match.com had websites. So you'd have to go on the desktop and you'd have to...
Well, they existed. I was just married. But when I met my now ex-wife, they didn't exist then, you know, because I met her in the late 90s.
Oh, yeah. So. No. Back then we had to use your real...
You had to talk to women. It was
weird. You had to Well, let me ask you a question, because over the last year or so, I've been relying on dating apps, but I've been trying to get out into the real world and meet women that way. And I've hit a roadblock. More of my ego. Like, so I see somebody attractive and then almost like I'm 16 again. It's like I don't have the confidence to approach her. Yesterday, I'm playing pickleball. I'm a tennis player, but I got into pickleball recently and it's a lot of fun. And there's a court over here that opened up that has like 20 courts, and you can book for social events, and you just book, and nobody knows everybody. Nobody knows anybody until you start playing a lot. I showed up yesterday and there were about six of us, and three or four of them I knew. There was a Latina there that was beautiful and in my age bracket, but maybe a couple years younger. And there was this vibe that was going on, and we would play together. Then she'd be, you know, we get to rotate. So she'd go off the court, she'd come back on, and she was clapping every time I did it, like I slammed dunk or something. And I know a little Spanish. So I finally came up to her and I said, you know, hablas español. And then I told her in Spanish, do you know how beautiful you are? And she took a step back and she was shocked because you look at me, I'm a gringo. You know, I'm this white dude, you know, long hair and tattoos. And she did not see that coming. And she was really interested. Long story short is I walked her out to her car and I said to her, are you in a relationship? Are you single? Do you have a husband? And she said, no. And I said, can we exchange phone numbers? I'd like to get to know you. And she took her phone out. We exchanged numbers. Somebody told me this trick that you take a selfie together and then you send the picture to her so she knows who you are, blah, blah, blah. Everything. I'm going home, riding home in my car on a high horse. Like, oh my God, I finally did it. I approached somebody. I had game. The Spanish thing had a little like angle to it. Last night, I texted her about 7 o'clock. Very casual. And I'm not going to say her name, obviously, but hello. And I did it all in Spanish. And the answer was completely unexpected. All I said was something like, if you got any time, I'd like to maybe not tonight or tomorrow, but let's chat. I'd like to get to know you a little better. And I got an answer like, I got a really busy schedule. But you know what? I'll see you at pickleball next week. And that was the response. Mm. Completely different vibe than when we left the pickleball court. So 4 hours later, she's like, and so I wrote back. So I said, just so I'm clear, we're going to be pickleball friends because I'd really like to get to know you and take you out to dinner. And she was like, no, we're going to be pickleball friends. Mm. Any thoughts on that? Because I got mixed back because clearly at pickleball, she was into me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting when you're initially talking to a girl like that and you close at a high point, that's typically a good place to do it, you know? And then, but the thing is like when you reach back out that second time, you're almost starting over from scratch, you know?
Yeah.
So you got to, it's almost like you got to treat it that way. You got to almost now treat it like it's a dating app where you got to banter a little bit, you know? And I like to say it's very similar to when you're approaching them in person, right? You want to keep the conversation no longer than 10, 15 minutes. And then even that's pretty long time, you know, maybe even 8 to 10 minutes before you find a segue to close for a number. Same thing goes with dating apps and texting. You want to build a little rapport by bantering, but you want to keep it short, like 8 to 10 minutes, you know, like bring up. A good way of doing it would be to call back to something that you talked about at pickleball. Say, hey, you know, I found this meme and it just reminded me of whatever, like what we were talking about, whatever. And then banter a little bit, get her back to a high point, and then say, you know, hey, you seem like a cool chick. Like we should hang out outside of pickleball. Like, when are you free to get together?
Yeah.
You know, that would have probably been a more effective way. But also, if she's just not into you, she's just not into you either. So a woman's actions will never lie to you, and that's what's good, right? Is she's what I would refer to as a, well, at least the second time around, a rejector, right? Yeah. There's basically four types of women, right? There you have reciprocators, you have rejectors, you have manipulative time wasters, and then you have wholesome pretenders. And I learned that from Alan Roger Curry. He wrote a book series called Mode One, but when she's bantering with you and then offering your number, if she's really not into you but still willing to play that game, she's a manipulative time waster, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that you said, hey, I'd love to go out to dinner sometime, when are you free? And she's like, I'll meet you at pickleball. She's basically a rejector. And I love they're out of the four women, the two best ones in my opinion are the reciprocators and the rejectors, because they don't leave you guessing, right? It's like
there's no guessing on this one. No.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, fine. You know, pickleball friends.
It was just odd because I specifically said, do you have a husband or boyfriend? And she said, no, I don't. And then she turned to me and said, but aren't you married? And I said, no. And I said, where did you get that idea from? And she heard me say something about my tennis partner, who's a dude, that he couldn't make it next Sunday morning. And she misinterpreted that, like, my wife couldn't. I don't know. So
she heard the word partner and then make it. And she put two and two together.
So I don't know. Maybe she thinks I was lying and I'm trying to step outside of my marriage. I'm not married. I've been single for 2 years. So
doesn't matter. It's one of those things where a lot of guys focus on what could I have done this better? Could I have gone? It's not really important. You know, there, some of that stuff, it's like, yeah, you maybe could have done it better. But if she's not interested, she's not interested.
Yeah.
And your only job when you're out dating really is testing for interest and testing a woman's ability to follow your lead. And that's it. And otherwise, you're there to facilitate fun and fuck. And and if a woman is not interested, that's not your problem. That, you know, she's missing out. And if it,
and Paul, a year ago or 2 years ago, I would have come home and sulked for 3 days. I would have been like, you know, all down on myself. I'm going to say it again. Thanks to you and some other podcasters and a lot of reflection on myself and my own self-improvement. I blew it off last night. I just said, you know what? I'm on 3 dating apps. And by the way, you were talking about Facebook. Facebook has a dating app. A lot of people don't know that, and it's free. And you're right. The dating pool on Facebook, there's how many users on Facebook? A billion?
There's four billion women, or something, 4 billion like, people on, there's a billion users on a daily basis on Facebook.
Yeah. So,
and you'll find that you can actually like look in your local area and look for women in your local area and almost like sort them by age, you know, and just go through and you do a cursory sort of look and see if they're single or not. And you add them as friends. It's so that, so what I'm talking about is not Facebook dating, which is the dating app part of Facebook, but Facebook proper, like meeting women on there and then using sliding into their DMs. There's a science behind sliding into their DMs, but it's like virtual cold approach.
Yeah. My Mac does this. Do you see that?
Yeah. Do you use the thumbs up thing? And
it just pops. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. So if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see what I'm talking about. My screen is making like these 3D holographic emojis. Okay. I have not addressed the red pill movement on my podcast. I don't think. I have a couple of hundred episodes, and I don't remember directly talking about it. And I think you would be the guy to help me break the ice. What is the red pill movement, and where do you fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, well, it's not really fair to call it a movement. Though people say that, they'll say red pill philosophy, they'll say red pill movement. Red pill is basically a praxeology. And a praxeology, if you guys don't know, NLP. Neuro-linguistic programming is a praxeology. It's basically where you try to model certain behaviors and certain things that work, and you have people go out and test it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, you discard it, right? And so we're not concerned about scientific studies. We're not concerned about having, you know, necessarily, you know, course curriculum and stuff in the colleges. We're only concerned about what works and what doesn't, right? And so the red pill is fascinating. It basically came out of the pickup artist community. So like I was talking about earlier with the game by Neil Strauss, that kind of community. It was guys on forums like So Suave, and there, you know, these forums that still exist today. SoSuave.com still exists. Now a lot of forums have moved to Reddit and Facebook groups and stuff like that. But it was just guys swapping notes about women. Like, hey, I went out and tried this out when I was out cold approaching. This worked and this didn't. And what the red pill guys did was they took what the pickup artists were doing. They were figuring out, okay, all this type of stuff works, but why does it work? Like, what is it about that, you know, what is it that these guys are doing that women are responding to it? And so they took stuff from evolutionary psychology and evolutionary biology to try to come up with answers, like why do women do what they do? What makes them tick? And so it's really just started off as guys in groups swapping notes about women. It ended up, there's a lot of different sort of related I guess, niches that are related to Red Pill. You'll have like the MGTOW community, the men right. going their own way.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They'll study the Red Pill stuff. And some of those guys will get really angry with women, right? They'll get angry at women's nature and, you know, women don't love you unconditionally. And then they get mad at the truth. And so they give up on women altogether. We call those guys Black Pill guys. And then there's certain guys in the MGTOW community who they learn Red Pill. They understand what it's all about. And they're just like, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to have good relationships with women. I'm just probably not going to get married again, right? I'm not going to like get the state involved in my relationship. And that's sort of where I would say I
that's
probably
where
fall
you
on
fall
that
in.
Spectrum.
Yeah, I've heard you say that. Yeah.
But otherwise, all it is just guys swapping notes about what works and what doesn't with women. So a guy named Ryan Stone, I think, came up with the idea that the Red Pill is basically the Chilton's manual of women and intersexual dynamics, right? If you guys don't know what a Chilton's manual is, because we all have YouTube now, but Chilton's manual, if you ever wanted to work on your car back in the day, you would go to the auto parts store and buy a Chilton's manual.
Yep.
You can still buy them. And what Chilton did was they would take a car and strip it all down and completely dismantle the car and show you how all the parts go together. Right. You take that and now you can figure out how to replace parts on your car.
Right.
Red Pill does the same thing. It's not good. It's not bad. It's not, you know, evil versus, you know, pure, whatever. It's just, this is human nature. Here's
right.
the data. Right.
Yeah.
And then you can take it and do what you want with it. Right. And so you'll find that there's other sort of subgroups of Red Pill. There's like Father Red Pill, right? There, you know, guys learning how to apply the praxeology to being a better parent. There's married Red Pill, where guys typically they find the space because they're in a dead bedroom situation. And so they're like, man, I've been married for 20 years. Everything was hot and heavy in the beginning. Why doesn't my wife want to fuck me anymore? Right. And so they'll seek out those types of answers and usually find themselves in the married Red Pill, where you can understand women's nature and actually have healthier relationships. Right. So you can do with it what you want. Some guys take it and they become womanizers and just spin plates for the rest of their life. It's like, right. You could, you know, whatever makes you happy. Right. So,
all right. Like, you know what? You just said the magic word. Let's talk about your book because you said the guys that are married and their wives aren't fucking them in the bedrooms anymore. So that's the title of your new book. So let's talk about that. What inspired you to write that? And what do I get? You want to pull out some points from the book that you want to highlight?
Yeah. So Get Her to Fuck You Again is the name of the book. It's available on Amazon and Audible. And I got the idea to write it last year sometime. I started working with a business coach, because I was doing coaching, and I was doing a lot of date coaching, you know, a lot of helping guys pass divorce, back on the dating circuit type stuff. And I wasn't getting a lot of fulfillment out of that. You know, I didn't like that. And my relationship with Nurse Chick had sort of gotten to a place where I was really more relationship focused. So I wanted to start really helping guys, you know, after I'd spent so much time helping guys get girlfriends, you know, how do they keep these relationships going in the long term? And and my colleague in the space, Ryan Stone, he one of the things that he told me was that 99% of the guys who are married in the space come to the Red Pill because their wives aren't fucking them anymore. And so I was like, yeah, that makes sense. So if I help those guys, you know, I'm basically niching down my content to just focus on one subgroup of, you know, with one problem and
right.
Like, let's just fix this one problem. So I just made that decision last year to niche down, because otherwise, if you talk about dating and relationships, I mean, it's a very broad spectrum of topics, you know, and when you're trying to grow a YouTube channel and, you know, trying to grow a podcast, the common advice you get is to niche down. And so I decided, you know, I think I'm going to get more fulfillment helping men save their marriages, you know, because it just from a moral standpoint.
Yeah, I agree.
In sort of a compassionate standpoint, I would say, because like I said before, Red Pill's not good or bad. It's not like there's no morals. It's just it is what is. But you could take your own morals and values and put yourself put it on top of that, one of the things I realized is, man, I never want men to have to go through what I went through. You know, a lot of guys find their way to the space through pain. And, and man, going through a divorce is one of the most painful things a man can go through, right? Some guys come out better than others. Some guys end up unaliving themselves, right? It runs the gambit. You'll find though that a vast majority of guys get completely wrecked in divorce. Their lives are ruined. They don't get to see their kids as much, if at all. I know one of the guys in my beer club. He went through one of the most horrendous custody battles I've ever seen in my life. The courts ended up splitting up his kids, so he gets one, his wife gets one, and wow. then last year, his wife decided to file to keep him from visiting his daughter that was living with the wife. And so now he was trying to fight, you know, to be able to stay in his daughter's life. And it's just that kind of stuff. I don't want guys to have to go through that. Yeah. And if it could be prevented. And so I thought, you know what, man, if I could save some marriages out there, it would just be personally rewarding, yeah. You know, because our divorce rate in this country is astronomical. And it's not getting better. And a lot of the relationship advice out there, the blue pill type advice, just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so why not give some guys the tools that actually might save their families and save their marriages and keep things intact? You know, like they put 20 years into this stuff. Like, why not keep that going?
Oh, so, I agree.
So I decided I'm going to go down that road. And then my business coach is like, you know, you have a book on dating, you have a book on paradigms, like you need a book on dead bedrooms, you know, so that you can really help guys with this type of thing. And so I didn't want to just stay there either. So I came up with this idea. When I came up with the idea for the book, I was like, why don't I make a series out of this? And it'll be a series around relationships and things guys deal with relationships. So typically it's, you know, your relationship's going downhill. Right. That's Get Her to Fuck You Again. The next book, which I'm still finishing up, that should be out in June. It's going to be called Forget That Bitch. So that's a guy dealing with a breakup. Right. And then and also coming out the other side and working on himself so that he can be in a healthy space to find another relationship. And then the last book in the series, which I'm hoping I'll get done by the end of the year. That one's going to be called Keep Your Bitch. And it's all about maintaining that long-term relationship once you get the new relationship. So I'm going to make a whole series about it.
Where were you 3 years ago when I needed you?
Yeah.
In writing the book, and I'm guessing you were inspired by a lot of the guys in the beer club or your subscribers, your audience. What's the number one reason that bedrooms go dead? Or is there one?
There is. And we call it the banalization process, right? The banalization process is a five-step process where men oftentimes are the attractive guy. They are setting the tone and leading, at least in some way. And the woman's into him for some reason, right? And so usually that's why when you get into a new relationship, like sex is always hot and heavy and it's exciting, yep. And you're doing fun things together.
Honeymoon period. Yeah.
Right. Well, the problem with that is that a lot of guys, they start failing her tests, right? All women test men either consciously or subconsciously. And so the first phase in the banalization process is she starts testing you. She wants to see if you're the strong masculine man she thinks you are that's going to set the tone and lead the relationship, that's going to set boundaries, that's going to be able to, you know, deal with her emotional bullshit. And most guys fail that stuff. Most guys have no idea they're even being tested.
Is that the shit test?
Those are shit tests, yeah.
Yeah.
And they come in all sorts of forms, right? Like sometimes it's a playful jab. She might, you know, maybe make fun of me because I'm follically challenged or something, right? And it's like, if I get mad at her and blow up at her and say, you're a fucking bitch for that, I failed the test. You know, she was able to get a rise out of me, and that you failed the test. Sometimes when you're out dating, a big thing that women will do to you is nurse chick did this to me. She tried anyway. They will, you'll make plans, right? Women love men that make plans. So I would, my go-to when I was setting up dates is I wouldn't ask women on a date. I would tell them, right? I would say, hey, when are you free to get together? Cool, meet me at this place at this time, you know? And so I'm telling them what to do. And you get more yeses when you do that. And so I told Nurse Chick, hey, meet me at Starbucks on Sunday at 3 p.m. or whatever. And she's like, okay, fine. And then like the next day or maybe the day before the date, she goes, hey, I was thinking instead of meeting at Starbucks, why don't we meet across the street at the park? I'll go get the Starbucks and I'll bring it over. And that's a common shit test. Women don't do that kind of thing subconsciously. They're basically trying to change the plans on you to see if they can take the lead, if they can get in the driver's seat. And if you let them, if you go, oh yeah, yeah, that's a good plan. Let's go with your idea. That's the first failure right there. She's able to change the plans and she doesn't want to win. So I recognized that when she did that to me. And I said, no, we're going to keep with the original plans. I'll meet you at Starbucks tomorrow.
Wow.
And she told me later, she goes, when you didn't let me change the plans, I didn't know why, but I fucking loved it. And it's because,
really?
Yeah, because women are programmed, you know, and if you ever have women tune in the show, they hate, you know, hearing this stuff.
Right.
But that's the observer effect, right? Like women respond a certain way. They don't know that they're playing a game. They just want to play the game. As soon as you tell them this is what you're doing, all of a sudden it pulls them out of it. They're looking at it like a third party observer, and then they'll argue with you about it. And so you can't red pill women. You can't tell them this stuff. Hey, by the way, this is why that worked on you.
No.
A lot of guys make that mistake.
No.
So, but you just got to understand, like, women don't want to win. They want a guy that is firm with his boundaries. He doesn't budge, and that she can't get her way with. And women might even throw a little fit. They might act indignant. They might act like they're mad. That's just another shit test. So as long as you stay cool, you don't let it rattle you, and you show her that you're unshakable, 30 minutes later, she's going to be crawling into your lap, just fucking loving the shit out of you because she couldn't get her way with you, right? So that's the first step in the baitization process. A lot of guys fail that sort of thing. And then after that, it goes into stuff like she starts getting you to be more emotionally vulnerable with her. And then, you know, hey, I want you to open up to me. And so guys think, oh yeah, let me just lay my baggage and traumas on you. And then she takes that shit and uses it against you.
Of course.
Right? And
then, yep.
Mm-hmm. Another thing they start doing, the next step after that, is putting you to work. Now, some of that's not bad, right? Like a woman who sees that you have ambition and drive and she sees your potential, a good woman will be in this phase and try to get you to be the best version of yourself, get out there, become an executive, go for that promotion, whatever. She will push you in that direction. But another thing women will do is try to get you to do more chores around the house. Hey, can you help me fold the laundry? Can you do the dishes? All this kind of stuff. And the more you do it to try to keep her happy, the more respect she loses for you, right? And so you got to be able to tell her, no, I'm busy. I can't do the dishes right now, right? Or you have your own shit that you're dealing with, right? You're going around painting the house or whatever. You just can't let her dictate terms and be ordering you around and making you do all this work. One of my clients right now, that's one of the things that he's recognizing, is that his wife, for every one thing he asks her to do, she'll ask seven things of him. And she doesn't ask, she tells him, hey, honey, can you go get the can you go change the diapers? Hey, honey, can you go do this, right? Or go do this. And she just orders him around. And so he's recognizing this. And so he's learning to tell her no more. And she's loving it. She loves that.
Really?
She loves it. Yeah. So that's that one. And then, so once she gets to a point, basically, where she's lost all respect for you because you're failing her tests, you're emotionally vulnerable with her, and she's using that against you, she's putting you to work, you're her fucking dutiful plow horse. Now she's lost all respect for you. Now she starts getting into her evolutionary selfishness phase, and she starts looking around for her male orbiters, and that's usually where a woman ends up cheating or divorcing you or dumping you, you know. And it's women do it. They start this process, and they don't want to win. Like, and they're not doing it to purposely destroy the relationship, but most guys just aren't aware of what's going on, and so they allow themselves to become totally baitatized. They go really hard on the good husband, yeah. the good father. I'm a provider and I put food on the table, but it's not sexually attractive stuff. And so she loses that sexual attraction, and now she wants to get that somewhere else. And that's just women's hypergamous nature. So if you want to prevent that, you have to basically get a guy back to the beginning of the baitization process. You do that by teaching them how to handle these shit tests, how to start setting boundaries, how to be more assertive in your communication style. And once a guy can start learning that and being his own mental point of origin and actually start dictating the terms of the relationship by making the plans, telling her what's going on. Hey, we're doing this tonight. I made these plans. We're doing this. We're not doing your way. Like that kind of stuff. Women at first will test that because you haven't done that in 15 years. All of a sudden, right. you're this alpha male guy, and she's going to start testing you even more now. And one of the reasons, I was just on a stream right before this guy was questioning me because I don't work with women. I only work with men. One of the reasons for that is that observer effect that we talked about. You know, women, if they know what's going on, if they know that I'm teaching her husband how to be a better leader in the relationship, she's going to test him even more.
Right.
Because she knows what's going on. Now she has that third party observer effect. When he tells her no or tries to set a boundary, she's going to be like, oh, that's what your coach told you to do. Fuck that. Right. And then she's going to be even more, you know, undesirable. And so you don't bring women into the equation. You don't tell her what you're working on. You just start acting a certain way. And what happens is women, all of a sudden they start looking at what's going on. Something's changing here. They test you to see if this is the real you. But as long as you can handle those tests, they start relaxing more into their feminine and they start following your lead. And then you can actually turn that relationship around. It's a fascinating process.
Do you think these shit tests, which I just love that term. Yeah. Do the women do these on dates, like first, second, third dates?
They do them all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they'll do it on the dating app. They'll do it on the date. And 99% of the time, it's subconscious. They don't even know they're doing it.
It's programmed into them. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's an evolutionary reason behind it. But, and we call them shit tests, right? But it's not because they're doing it to be shitty. They're doing it to test to see if you have your shit together.
Okay.
And so, but a lot of guys hear these shit tests and it's almost like, oh, she's just throwing shit at me. That's not that's not really what she's doing on purpose. But if you take it that way, like it's an insult, you just failed the test.
You failed the test. Yeah. No. Wow.
And some guys will say, well, I have a woman that like, she never tests me. And it's like, that's not true. Not all. No, they all do it at some level. Some do it more than others, but they all do it. And the thing is it's not a test until you fail it, you know? So if you're naturally responding in a way that she finds attractive, she's not actively thinking of it as a test. You're just behaving the way she thinks you should behave. And but she immediately knows it once you don't behave the way she thinks you should behave. And now all of a sudden she loses respect for you. And now she starts, you know, being, an insufferable bitch.
Yeah. And no sex in the bedroom.
Right.
That's. You had an episode earlier this week. So we're recording this on March 23rd. I think it was your Monday or Wednesday episode. That you listed 20 dates ideas. I found that to be fantastic. Some of them, I don't know if they were designed for dates that you're already in a relationship or first dates.
They were all designed for guys who have been in long-term relationships. Yeah,
okay.
Some of those would be pricey, you know, like a hot air balloon.
Yeah, I was like, that's got to be $500, if not more. And yeah.
Now, if you watch the whole episode, near the end, one of the things I said in there, I was like, this is not for first dates, not at all.
Okay.
And a lot of guys will do that kind of shit, right? They'll do these grand romantic things on a first date to try to impress a girl. But that's not what you need to be doing. A girl needs to earn more expensive dates, more lavish dates. But a lot of guys are leading with their wallets, trying to like, hey, look how much money I make. And
right.
Trying to impress a girl, and you don't even need to do that. Like, keep initial dates, low investment, drinks only in the evening, no dinners, because all that shit adds up for one. And two, like, these women need to earn this stuff. You know, there's some women out there that are using guys on dating apps to stay fed, right? Yep. Like, they'll go out to dinner and then they'll go meet their next date right after and get drinks, free drinks. And
yep,
they'll go their whole week like that and not have to buy any fucking groceries. And there's plenty of simps out there that'll pay for that.
Yeah.
And women are happy to use men that lead with their wallets. So don't be that guy. Just drinks only. And you're there to see if you like her or not, not the other way around. So if you get there and she's kind of a, you know, you have to drag a conversation out of her. She's got a personality like an apple. Just end the date after that first drink, right? And just be like, well, I got an early night. I got to get going. It was nice meeting you. Best of luck in your dating, and fucking end that shit.
Have an exit strategy. And I agree. I made the mistake about a year and a half ago. I took this woman. I'm really into Latinas. It's my thing.
It's that crazy pussy, man. Oh,
but they're a little crazy up here too.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's funny because the last girlfriend was from Ecuador, and I really wasn't supposed to say that because I never revealed that, but whatever.
There's lots of girls in Ecuador.
I went where I work. There's a lot of Hispanics and a lot of Hispanic women, and they're all from Puerto Rico and whatever. And when I told them that she was from Ecuador, they looked at me and they said, bail now, get out now. They are crazy, batshit crazy in Ecuador. I was like, no, she's beautiful. Turned out they were right.
Note to self, Ecuadorians are crazier than Colombians. Yeah. I don't know.
Funny. I've been to South America, and I was in Colombia, and I was in Ecuador back when I was a teenager. I was a student exchange, so I've been down there. And back then, being a gringo was really hot to them because at 15 or 16, I was getting pussy down there at 16 years old because I was an American kid from, you know, but that was back in 1975. I don't know what it's like there today. Let's talk about quickly a couple of ideas for first dates. So let's say, for example, and this is my thing because I don't drink. So I might not take a woman to a bar, although I could. I could have a club soda or ginger ale. What's some other first date ideas?
That's all I do. That's all I recommend to guys. Just drinks in the evening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the full recommendation is have a go-to place, right? Have one place that you take all first dates to. And for me, it was, if I was taking a girl in Grand Junction out, it's the Feisty Pint. That was my go-to place. If it was a girl in Montrose, I would take her to the Horsefly. If it was a girl in the Delta County area, I would take her to Seabees, right? But those were my go-to places. And the reason why is because it builds muscle memory, right? One, builds muscle memory. Two, you don't have to think about it. Women like guys to make the plans,
yes,
set the tone, and lead, right?
Yep.
So a big mistake guys do when they're dating is they'll say, hey, what do you like to do? What are you into? And then they'll say, hey, let's go out sometime. Where should we go? And basically what you're doing is you're making her the leader of the relationship out the gate. You're making her decide. Women don't like deciding things. Women can't even decide what they want to eat half the time. They don't even know what they want to fucking wear half the time.
Yep.
So when a guy does that, it's immediately, fuck. You know, like, they don't want to have to come up with that stuff. They really respond well to guys who have a plan. So if you have a go-to place, you just run this playbook on every girl you meet, right? So all you have to do is ask her when she's free. Hey, when are you free to get together? Cool. Meet me at the Feisty Pint, 7 p.m. on Thursday.
I like that. Okay. Right?
And the best thing about that is you become a regular going to these places. You start meeting the staff. You start, you know, meeting the waiters and the bartenders. You develop a rapport with these guys. You give them bigger tips, right? That kind of stuff. Basically, you're this isn't a first date for you, right? She's the only one on this first date. You've done this 100 times.
100 times. Yeah.
And so
I like that.
It builds up that habit, the muscle memory. You know the place. You run the same playbook on her. It becomes second nature.
Your anxiety level comes down a couple of notches too, because you're going somewhere. Because walking into a place that you have no idea, that you've never been there before, you don't know what it's like, you know, so you got that side of it where I would be like, I'd be looking around, where we sit. I like your idea. I like if you go to the same place. I made the mistake of doing that with a restaurant, and I had a go-to restaurant, and this is why I'm in the podcasting and learning and listening to guys like you. I started taking women to this really, really nice, beautiful, small Italian restaurant that we have. I live down by the beach here in out on Long Island, and it's everybody loves this little place, but it's kind of like a secret, but the locals know about it. Anyway, I would take them there, but it's expensive. It, you know, even without alcohol, it was $100, $125.
Yeah.
And I took
that adds up.
Yeah, it does. If you can't do that once a week or even three times a month, I took this one woman, and I kind of knew when I sat down, because now we hadn't met face to face yet. And we sat down, and I kind of knew right away, this is, I don't know. Women say that they'll know in the first 7 seconds of a date whether they're going to kiss the guy or fuck the guy or whatever. I don't know how true that is, or whether they'll be interested. I knew within 7 seconds that I didn't even want to kiss this woman, but we're there. And I already fell down that rabbit hole. So
yeah.
We had dinner, and I took her back to where her car parked or whatever. And when I got home, I just did the right thing, because I don't believe in ghosting. I texted her, I had a great time tonight. I just don't think we're a match. And she wrote back, I agree. So that goes back to your point where sometimes I think women are going out grabbing free dinners because
yeah,
she got a really nice Italian dinner out of me. So
yeah. One thing too, and you mentioned you don't drink alcohol, and that's probably the biggest, you know, pushback I'll hear from guys with that thing, like, hey, have a go-to bar or whatever. It's, well, I don't drink alcohol. Well, they serve non-alcoholic drinks there. You can get a mocktail, you can get an iced tea, like whatever. It's more about the atmosphere than anything.
Yeah.
But what's really good about it, because a lot of guys also will say, well, what if the waitress comes up and says, you know, hey, weren't you here with another girl last time? They won't. Most of them won't do that because they won't know they're not going to get a fucking good tip if they ruin your date.
Yeah.
But two, if you build up a rapport with all the waitresses and the bartenders and all that kind of stuff, they become your friends, and they are basically your wingmen there. You know, wingmen and wingwomen. You have instant social proof because, the Tammy, the waitress, comes up. She's like, oh, hey, Paul, you know, how's it going? And, you know, what's your dog up to or whatever, right? The date is going to look at you like, who's this guy? Like, how does he know everybody? Like, women, they like a guy who everybody likes. That's social proof.
Wow. Women, I never thought of that. Okay.
Women also like men who other women like, right? So if they have this perception that you're seeing other women, that actually makes them more attracted to you, because they're like, oh, well, if other women like him, he must be a catch.
Yeah,
that's women's monkey brains working. Like, it's a subconscious thing. They're not actively doing that, right? So that's why another thing that guys do that ruins their chances with women is women will often ask, like, oh, are you seeing anybody right now? Or are you, you know? And a lot of guys are like, oh, no, I'm not seeing anybody. You're the only girl I'm talking to. Thinking that you have to be loyal out the gate when you just met a girl that you know from a dating app that you don't owe anything to. And there's a guy I know in the space. He says it very well. He's like, when you tell a woman you're not seeing other women, you're basically telling her I don't fuck. And women don't like that.
No.
So it's better to just playfully be vague with that and be like, well, I always have room for one more, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then it could be, yeah, I'm seeing thousands of women, I'm seeing no women, or whatever. It's very ambiguous, but it gets her hamster wheel going. That actually boosts her attraction. So a lot of guys don't realize that. I used to make that mistake also, like, oh, no, I'm not seeing anyone. But being a sniper dater, that was typically true, right? You're only talking to one girl at a time. So that ends up being true. But you'll find that, if you're dating multiple women, all these types of game type responses become easier. A lot of guys think, oh, I couldn't possibly date more than one woman. I guess it's too hard to juggle one woman, right? And it's like, no, it's actually way easier. It is easier.
And I had the girlfriend before the last one pulled that trick on me on a date. We were on our second or third date, and she just came out of the gate and said to me, you know, I'm seeing some other guys. And I don't remember what my reaction was, but I was like, okay, it's like, you know, it's the second date. And she said that his name, one of the guy's names happens to be Andrew. And I'm like, why are you telling me this? You know, like.
That's all shit test. Yeah,
exactly. And, but it kind of, the third or fourth date, she said to me, remember that guy I told you that I was seeing, Andrew, and you, well, you won. I'm gonna tell the other guy I'm not dating him anymore. And we ended up in a relationship, which failed 18 months later anyway. That was a COVID death. That relationship ended because of COVID. So,
A lot of relationships ended during COVID.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them did. All right, Paul. Well, I feel like I could talk to you for another hour or two. It's just, you're a wealth of knowledge.
One thing I want to add to that.
Sure. Go.
One thing, just that last thing there, when a woman says, hey, I'm seeing all these other guys. Neil Strauss in The Game, one of the most coolest sort of indifferent type responses to the shit test like that is he would just go, respect. That's all he would say. respect. You know, it's almost like a nonchalant dismissal of what she just said.
Right.
And it's funny, but that's a great way to handle a thing like that. When a woman's I don't remember. You know, I'm seeing other guys. Yeah.
I don't remember my reaction. It was 6 years ago, but I just remember it because when you said it, that if a guy says, or if the woman feels like, or like Tammy, the waitress comes over and she must think that you have a lot of girlfriend, whatever. I just remember a woman tried to pull that on me once and it worked. So.
Well, a lot of guys get really upset with that too. And it's like, you have to assume they're all seeing other guys and you need to be too. And if you're not, you're a fool. But a lot of guys get all up in their head about it. Like, well, I don't want her out sleeping with, like, she's doing it anyway. Like, women are natural plate spinners.
Yeah.
Women are natural plate spinners. Their hypergamous nature requires them to look for their best possible options. So they're out testing the waters to see who's, they're trying to let the cream rise to the top to see who is their best possible option. Most guys just don't do that because we're not hypergamous by nature. And so, so we're not doing that. And so if you take a lot of what Red Pill and the pickup artist community did was they took what women did and used it for men's sensibilities. So if you spin plates, you'll find that the cream rises to the top for you too. It's a great strategy.
Yeah. No, I have this weird thing that goes on. I go through dry spells and
everybody does.
Yeah.
Everybody
and then does. All of a sudden it's pouring. Like, I'll have three or four women on one app. I'm chatting with them. And it can be confusing sometimes. It's like Amy, Jane, and I got to go back and look at their profiles and remember what they said. Or if we talked on the phone 2 nights ago, I got, does she the one with the dog or the two cats? Or it can't, but it's almost like you got to have a spreadsheet, you know, and keep track of these.
Yeah. That's why I try to keep a lot of conversations vague. I don't like to use names. Just, you know what I mean? Like, it's easier to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. Wow.
But it does become easier. Last year in January, I did an episode on my podcast, and it was on the seasons of dating. Right? One thing that I noticed when I was out spinning plates is that there's a natural cycle that reoccurs every year. And so I did a whole episode breaking it down, right? Like, you've heard of cuffing season, right?
I was just gonna, the word that came to my mind.
Yeah, cuffing season is sort of like the last 3 months of the year. Well, like, what I found is, like, in January, there's a mad rush on the dating apps in January. It starts slowing down a little bit in February because a lot of women are locked up from Valentine's Day.
Yep.
And then they all dump those guys at the end of February. So March and April are usually pretty good dating months. And then you have, like, May and June are a little bit questionable. But, like, June, July, August is hot girl summer. So you get a lot of hookups, a lot of girls not looking to settle down. They're just out there living their best lives. But then September comes around and now they're like, oh, shit, I've been a hoe for the last 3 months. Now I need to lock a guy down to get ready for Thanksgiving dinner with the family so that Aunt Gertrude doesn't ask me why I don't have a date.
Yep.
And so then that goes to the cuffing season. It's a cycle. It does it every year. You'll find that dating apps have spikes and highs and lows around the same time every year.
Why do they call it cuffing?
I think the idea is that it's like handcuffs, right? She's trying to lock you down, take you all the family events and try to have, you know, get herself a serious relationship for the family events. But then by the end of December, she realizes that it was all yeah. a facade, and she doesn't like you anyway. A lot of women decide that they're going to try to get through the holidays before they divorce their husbands, all that kind of shit, right? Yeah. But you'll find that there's a lot of women that's, you know, I call it new year, new me season, which is January, right? That's where they right. dump their exes. And now they're like, okay, I'm out here for myself. I'm living my best life. Let's find a guy. Oh shit, Valentine's Day.
Yep.
I don't want to be alone for Valentine's Day. So there's a mad rush in January. It's interesting. You see it every year, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So when you find yourself in a dry spell, just look at what month it is. Go watch that video and go, oh yeah, this corresponds to what Paul's talking about.
Yeah. 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 No, I have been there several times, and thankfully, because of three podcasts and jobs and I also have some grandkids and I have a life. It's not a prior. You know what? 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when that relationship ended, my natural thing would have been to jump on a dating app and get back out there. And that's what you and I were talking about before we recorded, was the need to have a woman on my arm. And if the relationship ended, I was right back out there. And I had, but none of them were sustainable and none of them lasted. And they go a year, one went 3 years, but it ended. And I found myself repeating that cycle over and what's the expression? Doing the same thing, expecting different results, right? Is definition of insanity. Mm-hmm. And I was insane. And I took 2 years off. I have been dating. I just haven't gotten into any relationships intentionally. Yeah. Now I'm ready. And
yeah, it's really smart for guys. And most guys don't. Yeah, most guys can't be alone. You know, and that's a big problem with a lot of guys. But if you go through a breakup, it's a good idea to just take 3 months to 6 months.
Chill.
Just get off the apps. Just find yourself again. You know, we often say in the space, men don't find themselves; they build themselves. But a lot of guys get lost in a relationship, and they have to rediscover who they are as a single person again, yep. and just get comfortable being alone.
And you know? I didn't know who I was, and I was scared to be in my own skin. And you know what? I realized where I got this from. During the last 2 years of reflection, my dad passed away in 2014, but my mom passed away in 2008. I got a phone call 6 months after she was in the ground from my father saying, I found someone I'm going to ask to move in and I'm going to marry her. 6 months after my mom passed.
And wow. Yeah.
So I'm the only son. I got three sisters. He called me because he knew I would take the news better because, you know, he's going to tell his son. And he wanted me to break the news to my sisters. But anyway, the point is that it came from it's in my genes. So he couldn't be alone. The point is that he just, I forget what age he was, 72 or 74 when mom passed. He just, the thought of being alone, you know, he had just retired, gone to Florida. It just scared the shit out of him. So
it's fascinating to me now, being on the other side in the red pill space, seeing guys who not only can't be alone, but they have to be married, right? You can't just date. You have to actually go and, like you said, she's moving in and I'm marrying her. Like, I need a wife. And it's why can't you just have a healthy, like, long-term relationship without getting the government involved? You know, like,
you know what? You've said that a couple of times, and I'm kind of with you on that these days. But why? What does the government do if you're married?
Exactly.
Right? Okay. Like, yeah. Okay.
You know what I
okay.
mean? Like, a lot of people, it's just that we're so conditioned that it's not official unless you go down to the Justice of the Peace and, you know, and get
sign a piece of paper, right?
Sign a piece of paper and have it legally, you know, blessed by Uncle Sam that you're not married. But a lot of people, man, there's a really good book. A friend of mine early on in the podcasting, he doesn't do content anymore. His name, he went by Retired Goat on TikTok. Retired Goat wrote a book called Dilly Gaff. It's a dumb title, but it's called Dilly Gaff, The Truth About Marriage in the United States. And he broke down all these statistics about how a marriage before a certain time frame wasn't, the government wasn't involved. It was a matter between you and your wife and the church, right?
Right.
It was managed that way. And then the whole idea of a marriage certificate came because they wanted to keep black people from marrying white people. So they wanted the government to be able to say who could marry and who couldn't. That's why, like, you know, for the longest time, gay people couldn't get married and stuff, like, you know, whatever. But the thing is like the government implemented that so that they would have control over who could, you know, be together. And it's like, there's no real logical point to it if you think about it. And there's no real benefit. Some people might say, oh, well, there's taxes. Benefits and stuff. But man, I talk about it in Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was 18. I have a whole chapter on marriage and children. You could do pretty much everything under the law that you could do if you were legally married without being actually married, right? Like, you could put properties and trusts that you and your wife are trustees on, right? You can add people as beneficiaries to your insurance that aren't family members. Yep. There's, you know, she can get your, you know, life insurance and stuff. Like, you just have to name her as a beneficiary. You can give her power of attorney if you're in the hospital and you need her to make medical decisions. There's things you can do without getting the blessing of, you know, Uncle Sam in your relationship. And the number one reason I say don't do it is because as soon as you get Uncle Sam in your bedroom, Uncle Sam dictates how you break up.
They'll drag it on. And in New York, if you live with that person for 10 years, you become husband and wife anyway. It's common law. So
yeah,
it's state by state.
Common law states. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. In Everything I Wish I Knew When I Was 18, I break down. There's basically only two states. So I said, if you want to live this life, right, you want to essentially have a wife, but without the government involved, you want to have kids. At the time of that writing, there was two states where I would recommend you live if you were going to be in that situation. It was Kentucky and Florida.
Right.
Because those are the only two states in the nation. It might be different now, but when I wrote the book, it was the only two states in the nation where it wasn't common law. It wasn't a community property state. And those states had default 50-50 with child custody, which means if you get divorced or if you break up, because you don't have to be married to have a custody battle, right?
It's going to play out in court either way.
But the court will say, okay, we're going to default that you both get equal parenting time unless one person can prove why that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
And otherwise, so those are the only two states in the nation that it would be safe to do that. If you're here in Colorado, we're a common law state. So if you live together for more than, I think, 2 years, you're basically considered husband and wife at that point. And then now you guys could still break up cleanly if you guys are amicable and whatever. But when women find out, oh, hey, the government is going to back me and let me take half his shit. Then she'll file for an actual common law divorce. And now you have to go through the divorce process. And it's just like, man, why put yourself through it?
Yeah. Yeah. My second marriage, which I did not get married, but my second, we have my third, let's start again. My youngest son is a product of a relationship that I was with her for 10 years. Mm. And we had a son together. And actually, I got to go pick him up in a few minutes. And, it was great because there was, other than, there was a little custody battle early on. There was a little hiccup we had, which was ironed out. And then whatever, she ended up becoming unemployed and then came back and asked if she could move back in with me. And I said, yeah, but whatever. It's a long story. But we found out that New York State at the end of 10 years said that we were married, that we were common law. So. All right, Paul. Unbelievable. Just a great conversation. And I can't recommend his podcast. So tell the audience about your podcast, how many times you're live on YouTube, where we can find you, all that stuff.
Yeah, you can tune into my podcast. It's called the Come On Man Podcast. I have live episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on YouTube. If you want to listen to the replay, if you prefer audio and when you're driving your car, it's available on Spotify and iTunes and any place where you listen to podcasts, you can get the audio version that way.
Tell us about the beer club.
Yeah, I have a group for men. It's only $10 a month, but a lot of guys don't have an outlet, right? They don't have guy friends. They're in a relationship. When they have problems, they bring all their problems to their girl. Their girl, like, women don't care about your problems, so she loses attraction for you. it's like, save that shit for the boys, right? But a lot of guys are like, well, I don't have time to hang out with the boys. Well, beer club's a virtual place where you could do that. It's a Telegram community. And then once a month, we get together on a call very similar to this, and we just talk about guy shit. It's like, it's kind of like a bar scene, right? That's why it's called beer club. We don't actually, you don't have to drink beer.
You're right.
We just call it that. But that's beer club. Let's see, I have a website. If you go to fixeddeadbedrooms.com, you can find all my stuff there. Fixeddeadbedrooms.com is it's where my blog is. You can find my videos there. You can find my books there. You can book a call with me if you're in a dead bedroom situation and you want help out of it. I would say go there. Go to fixeddeadbedrooms.com. You'll find everything.
I don't know where you find the time to do all this because you still have a job. Like an IT job.
I'm busy. Well, but like I said, I work remotely, right? So
yeah. And then you got Nurse Chick. So where do you have time?
Yeah. I get up early in the morning. I get up around 5 a.m.
Me too.
I knock out a whole bunch of shit. I do my work day. And then I do a lot of my consultation calls in the evening. And then I get a couple hours to run game on Nurse Chick. And then it starts all over.
We didn't even get into your that you go to the gym, that you got a motorcycle. There's another whole side to Paul we didn't even touch upon. So I don't know. Maybe I'll have you back.
Anytime you want.
Yeah. All right, Paul. Everybody, Paul Bauer from the Come On Man podcast. Thank you, Paul, for joining us today.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it.
I cannot thank Paul Bauer enough for coming on the show. And I went back and looked at my podcast library, and I've been listening to Paul since 2023. It was like April of 2023. So, you know, when you look at your library, it tells you when you subscribed. So I've been, I think I told him it was about a year. It's been 2 years that I've been listening to Paul. And I was serious when I said that when I left that relationship that started this podcast, Paul was one of the very first podcasts that I tuned into. There was a whole slew of them, but I'm embarrassed to admit this. A lot of them were women podcasts talking about breakups. But at that time, I was so desperate to figure out what just happened and what I just went through, and all of the podcasts. But Paul's in particular, he really helped me build my confidence back and told me that, you know, it wasn't me and I wasn't the problem. Let me rephrase that. Of course, I needed to improve a lot of the things about what I was doing. So anyway, let me get to some important house cleaning stuff. You may have noticed a new cover art and a new name. So officially, as of today, and I want to thank Paul for helping me with this, the season 4, episode number 1, kicks off. The new name of this podcast, the Digital Dating Podcast with Anonymous Andrew. And so nothing's going to change really as far as the topic and theme. It's still going to be all about dating and relationships, and hopefully have more great quality guests like Paul come on. There's a few other guests that I'm chasing after to try to get them to come on. The problem in the podcasting world is that everybody, like you just heard Paul, he's got so much going on. Everybody's got so much going on. And trying to schedule a call for like an hour, hour and a half, you know, during the week and weekends, and it's crazy. So anyway, folks, I need your help. I really need your help. I need more interviews. I need you to like and subscribe this podcast. So whatever platform you're listening on, please hit that like or subscribe button and more reviews. I do have some good reviews. I'm up there, I think 4.8 or something. So I'm happy with that. But more. Folks, tell me what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear more of, and I'll do my best. And I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to cut this back to 2 episodes a month or leave it as is. I do have another podcast I'm launching called The Weekend Rant with Anonymous Andrew. And you guys know, for the longtime listeners, you know I have a weekend rant. And I have a really good one coming up. and I just have to find that time to record, edit, and publish it. But I'm in the middle of rebranding this one, so one day at a time, folks. Anyway, Anonymous Andrew saying thank you for tuning in, and we will talk to you shortly. Until the next time, ciao.